Psalm chapter 139. I just can't get away from it. Every time somebody asks me to do a devotion, I pray and ask the Lord for like a new scripture or something, and He just keeps bringing me back to Psalm 139. To me personally, this is the heart of the Old Testament. And for those of us that really like to study theology, this is one of the most theological statements, or I should say chapters, in the Old Testament. And when we're going through this, some people take it as all, let's say, the head. It's all theologically in the head. This is God's, you know, omniscience, omnipresence, you know, all of those things. And other people say, no, it's just the emotion. It's all the heart. But I really feel as I go through this, this is the perfect marriage of the heart and the head in Christianity. And as we know, King David was a man that was just like that. He was very poetic and very filled with emotion in the heart of God. And even the Lord said, He's a man after my own heart. But at the same time, David wasn't just one that spoke of great stories or wrote great music. He also understood the Lord. He sat back and he contemplated. He used the word meditate more times than we can count. And so this psalm, to me, is not only my heart, but it's the heart of the Old Testament. It's the heart of our great King David. But truly, when I read it, this is God. This is God. This is exactly who He is. And I think if I could try to, in one chapter, encapsulate God and man anywhere in the Bible, this is where we find it. And so as we go through this today, we want to point out three main things. So if we're speaking of an outline of this devotion, three main things. God, do you know? Are you aware? Is everything outside of your knowledge? Or are you aware of everything that's going on? God, do you know? And then, if you do know, God, are you present? Are you here? Are you aloof or far off? Or are we deist and we believe that God wound up the clock in a sense and then left it to itself just to slowly unwind? Or is God truly present today? So God, do you know? God, are you here? And number three, if you do know and if you are here, are you at work? God, do you know? Are you here? And what are you doing when you're here? Now that I understand that you are here and that you do know, what are you going to do about the situation? Lord, are you just standing by as some, you know, spectator watching something go down? And maybe that's a problem or a terrible scenario, and you're just seeing what other people will do? Or God, are you responding as a paramedic? Are you responding as a mother or father when they see their child fall? Lord, not only are you aware, not only are you around, but what are you doing in this situation? And so as we open up this psalm, we will see man's weakness and God's strength. Man's foolishness and God's wisdom. We will see man's inability to help himself and God's total ability to be in control of everything. Psalm chapter 139. Lord, you have searched me and known me. So David starts off with a very, very simple thing. Lord, you are the one that is in control. It's not a man searching for God. It's God searching in man. Lord, you have initiated it. And may we never forget it. Lord, you have initiated it. You have searched me, and also you know me. So first of all, with our beginning question, God, do you know? Absolutely. And do you know it just because you walked by and just glanced over and saw something happen? No, Lord. You here are like an investigator. You have initiated in your own desire to look into it, and not just superficially, but to go deep. Lord, you have searched who? You have searched me and known me. We could spend our whole morning on just that. But we know the word. So let's move on and really begin to mine out the rest of these riches. Lord, you have initiated it. Verse 2, you know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts afar off. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. In the Hebrew, this isn't simply sitting down for our meeting now, rising up and going back to work. This is, Lord, you know where I will live. You know where I will be planted. You know that I will be at this point in my life for 4 years in this city, working in this situation. And then somehow you will allow me, or you will cause me to rise up and be planted in a new place. Lord, you know when I sit. You know where I live. You know where I am. You know everything about me. And you know when that time will come to an end and when I will rise up from that. Don't we often say in way of application, Lord, are you even aware of what's happening here? Lord, was this a surprise to you? Because it's definitely a surprise to me. I had these expectations, and we all do in every part of our life. When I went to school, it was going to be this way. It didn't work out like that. When I went to college or whatever, it was going to be that way. And then I was going to graduate and get this job or marry this person or have this family or whatever it is that you think is going to happen. You preconceive. You put these expectations in your mind and you say it's going to be like this and like this. It's never that way. We know that. And thank the Lord, it's not that way. Because if I was in control of my own life, it would be a wreck. And if God allowed me to do everything I wanted to do, it would be a wreck. And you all would be negatively affected by my foolishness. But where does this say? Lord, you know where I am. And you know when that will change. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You discern my thoughts afar off. Before I even think, the Lord is discerning. And the word isn't simply, Lord, you're surfacely aware of my thoughts. Discernment is total knowledge. Not just about what's happening, but about all of the things that are going to be affected by it. Lord, you have complete understanding of my thoughts. Practically, we ask ourselves, Lord, I feel lost. I feel stuck. I feel trapped. I feel like it's never going to change. The Lord knew you were going to have that anxiety 1,000 years before it even happened. He is not surprised by anything. He knows everyone, and he knows everything that's happening. He is in complete and total awareness. Verse 3, you search out my path and my lying down. You are acquainted with all of my ways. You search out my path. What does this tell me? That first in verse 2, he knows where I'll live. And he knows where I'll rise up from and where I'll go to, but not only where my destination will be, but how I will get there. Lord, you know my path. And think of it in the time of David. David didn't live in an era of technology like we do, where we can literally say, tomorrow, what's the weather going to be like? Right? This morning before I came here, I opened my iPhone. What's the traffic like? Right? Those are paths. Well, in my world, I have satellites to kind of help me, guide me. But David's like, Lord, do I even know what's around the corner? You know, is there going to be a soldier? Because remember, he's writing these things oftentimes from times of hiding from soldiers that are trying to take his life. Lord, you know every twist, every turn. You know every angle. You know every step I'll take. You know my path. The path in these days, and when I'm living in Africa and spending a lot of time there, it's just like it is here. The path is the scariest place you can be. Because there's no control. Every bend could be a snake or a rebel soldier or something else. For example, I got an email 2 days ago from James Nika. He's here on your wall in one of your pictures. James Nika and I work full-time together in Sudan, reaching unreached tribes. And I said, James, I haven't heard from you for a while. What's happening? And he said, Rob, just 2 days ago, I was driving from one part of Sudan to the other. And as I was coming down the road, I noticed all these soldiers running across the road with their machine guns. And when you see that, you know there's something wrong in the path ahead. And he said, the captain said, you know, sir, don't go down that road. Come over here. And he stopped James and he said, in front of you, there's cattle raiders. These are men with huge machine guns that are stealing cows from one tribe to another. So the army was chasing after these cattle raiders. So we're talking about maybe 20 guys on one side, 20 guys on the other, all fully armed with AK-47s in open gun battle. And so he said, James, don't go down that road. Take this path. And James says, as he was talking to the guy, he saw a whole truckload full of soldiers load up and go down the road that he was just about to go down. And as he took the alternate path, when he came to the other side, they reported that truckload full of soldiers were attacked, and five of those soldiers that you saw alive an hour or two ago are now shot and killed and dead on the same road that you were supposed to be going down with a carload full of orphans that you were transferring from one place to another. Lord, you know my path. You know my path on the freeway, and you know my partner's path in Sudan. You know everything that's going to happen. We're all asleep, we're all awake, you know it, Lord. You know it all together. Verse 4, even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it all together. And so now, in a sense, it's like David is zooming in. He's not just saying the big picture, the major tragedies, the major victories. Now he's zooming into every single word spoken. How many words do we speak in a day? How many words will I speak during this Bible study time? My 4-year-old son never stops talking. Drives me absolutely insane. And I just think, how can this child, he thinks out loud, he must. He just talks constantly. And I just think, how many words is this kid using? The Lord knows every one of them. He's only 4. How old am I? How old are you? Before you speak, the Lord knows every single word. Words of encouragement, he knows. Words of discouragement, he knows. Words of depression, he knows. Everything that happens in your life, the most intimate parts, the Lord knows. Before you even say them, he knows them. And look what it says, all together. Lord, do you know? Absolutely. Is there anything outside of your knowledge? No. Verse 5, you hem me in behind and before, and you lay your hand upon me. So David is saying, Lord, you're not just aware of where I'll live, where I'll go, what my path is like, what I'll say, what I'll do. You're not just aware of that, but Lord, you actually protect me. You hem me in. You see the text. You hem me in behind and before. In other words, as a human, we are so fragile. It's like as we're walking down the street or going through our life, God is literally saying, my hand is in front of you and my supernatural hand is behind you. You are completely protected. Do I know? Absolutely. And with that knowledge, I have brought protection. And then he says, and you lay your hand upon me. What visual thing do I see here? I'm encapsulated by God. Totally shielded by God. People talk about living in a bubble. You know what I live in? I live in a supernatural, divine, sovereign bubble. Now, do I feel pain? Absolutely. Do I go through radical trials and struggles that go beyond my human ability to handle? Guaranteed. But in that, I am in a divine, supernatural protection. Is God aware? Yes. Is he there? Absolutely. He hems me in behind and before. He lays his hand upon me. And now verse 6, David steps back and he's amazed. And he says, such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain it. It is high, I cannot attain it. Theologian, take note here. Those of us that study, take note here. You will get to a place very quickly in the knowledge of God where you just have to step back and say, it's not possible for me to understand it. Deuteronomy, I think it's 29:29. Deuteronomy 29:29. Those secret things belong to the Lord. They are his. But those things that he's revealed to us belong to us and our children forever. So yes, there are huge, vast things that God wants us to study and be versed in. He wants us to be prepared. He wants to understand the word. He wants us, literally, as Spurgeon said, to study ourselves to death and to pray ourselves alive again. But at the same time, I have to realize I can't even begin to scratch God, scratch the surface of the knowledge of God to be able to really understand what this means. I have to, by faith, be a theologian. By faith, I must say, Lord, your knowledge is too much. And when I get to that point, I don't say, okay, I'm going to, in a sense, disregard or reject God's knowledge. I need to say, Lord, even though it's beyond me, I need to understand and decide that it's true. I need to decide that it's true. When I'm in situations where it goes so far beyond my human ability to either understand, control, or even realize the whole ramifications of what's happening. Lord, you know. And because of that, I will go on. Because of that, I will go on. And so here from David, let's take note. A true theologian is a worshiper. A true theologian has a heart that begins to, and let me embellish a little bit on this, begins to weep in the presence of God. Not just speak great things and learn, you know, great words and be able to be versed in this or that or study all of these things. I look around. I was, you know, meandering around your library before, you know, we started our devotions, and I'm looking at some of these books thinking, people took the time to write this stuff? I mean, they're so far outside of normal living that it's just beyond me. But Lord, if I know that, if I study you, if I'm going this far down a path of such just intensity on sovereignty or something else, I should end up with, you are great, Lord. And you are so great that I will stand back and love you. The mind should so affect the heart that tears come from the eyes. Let's never forget it. If I'm studying myself to death, my heart will be so filled with awe. Lord, such knowledge is too high, I cannot attain it. In verse 7, David begins to transition. Verses 1 through 6, Lord, you know. You know, you know, you know. Verse 7, now he says, Lord, you are there. You're not just aware, you are present. Verse 7, where shall I go from your spirit? Or where shall I flee from your presence? Now notice the switch in language here. Verses 1 through 6 is Lord you, Lord you, Lord you, Lord you. You are this, you know that. It's all about David realizing who God is and what God does. And then all of a sudden in verse 7, David says, wait, what about me? And notice the switch of total control to anxiety. Of total faith of God, you have it together to, what about me? I am too fragile. I am too frail. I don't even know what's going on. Verse 7, where can I go, Lord, from your spirit? We know the answer. Nowhere. Verse 8, if I ascend into heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in hell, you are there. There is nowhere I can find myself on this earth that God is not there. Now, we've all had these days or these weeks or these years. Lord, do you even know where I am? What does this tell me? Absolutely. Have I ever gone into heaven? No. I haven't even been to the moon, right? Have I ever gone into the depths and into shale? No, I've never even been in a submarine. I don't even travel that way, but there are moments when I feel like I am so far from the presence of God, He doesn't know. When my back went out and I came back from Sudan and I could barely get off the plane, I could barely walk to my car, I laid on the ground in my house for almost a month and shook in pain. Took as much painkillers as I could. I just shook in pain until somehow the chiropractor could adjust me to the point where that pain was slightly relieved. And when you're in that much pain, every second is eternity. Lord, are you here? Lord, are you here? And the Lord says, I've never changed. My love for you is still the same. If you're out having a picnic with your kids in the park, or if you're shaking in pain on the floor, I am here. No matter where you go, I am here. When I was with you last, I shared the story of being attacked in Africa with men with machine guns and all of that. The Lord was there in my most fearful moments, in my most painful moments. Lord, you are there. Verse 9, if I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea. 10, even there your hand will lead me, your right hand will hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me and the light about me is night. Verse 12, even the darkness is not dark to you, and the night is bright as the day, for darkness is as light to you. Lord, are you there? In every circumstance. No matter what I see, no matter what I feel, no matter where I am, no matter where I go, He is without a doubt there. Now, David is describing extremes here. Total darkness and total light. You know, as humans, if you're in a place of complete pitch black darkness, like let's imagine you're put into prison and you do something and they put you in what they call the hole, you can go mentally insane because of the darkness. Even if you have room to move, even if the temperature's right, even if you have food to eat, when you are in pitch black, you can go insane. You try to open your eyes and you feel like, I'm lost. Is the Lord there? He's right there. Because even the darkest place on this earth is light to the Lord. Because He does not need the sun. He is light. And we need to remember that. Let the theology go from the head into the heart. Lord, no matter what, if it's down or up, if it's dark or light, You are there. Now in verse 13, David switches. He switches away from himself and all of his anxieties and all of his questions of, Lord, what about this? What about that? All those questions have been answered. Lord, You know, the first section. Now, Lord, You're there. And now he switches back to not me, but Lord, You. Section 3, Lord, now that You are aware of what's happening, now that You're present with me, what are You doing about it? Are You moving? Are You active? Verse 13, for Lord, You formed me in my most inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. Lord, are You there? Yeah, and You're not just standing by. You are physically putting me together. Now, I believe this to be every human being. We can't say God loves this race more than that race. God loves that man or that woman more than this man or woman. This shows me right here that God is literally causing that initial egg cell to be generated, or however we would say it. The moment that life begins, God is there knitting it together. And when I get this picture of knitting, you think of an old woman, right? How much time does she take to do that? She might be chatting and talking for, let's say, weeks, 3-4 hours a day, just knit every little corner, every little stitch. When she's done, she creates this beautiful blanket or wall hanging or whatever she's making. But every one of those things was some kind of motion, was a thought, was intense. There God is with every one of you, just putting you together from the moment you were conceived, before you were even 6 months in the womb. Before you were born, before you could speak, before you were aware, before you could walk, before you could do these great things that you feel like you're doing for God because now you're this mature adult that's been born again and you've been enlightened and you're doing, God was there knitting you together before you were even formed. He was present and He was active. Never forget it. God was present and God was active. Verse 14, this is the response, for I praise You. For I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are Your works. My soul knows them very well. Does David say my head? No, my soul. You see the marriage here between theology and the heart? I've learned about it. I've studied it. I've researched it. God's revealed things to me. I've learned about it through other men of God. But now my soul knows it very well. This is the place of peace. We ask ourselves, Lord, I want to be at peace with You. Well, it's right here. I'm aware of You and what You do and where You are and who You are and what You're doing. And when my soul knows it, now I am content. There's no more anxious thoughts going on right here in this verse. This is a man. This is a woman studying that's at peace, at total peace. Verse 15, my frame was not hidden from You when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. The same pictures, again here, intimacy. Verse 16, Your eyes saw my unformed substance, and in Your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me. Let's read it again. The days that were formed for me, when yet there were none of them. So this, to me, answers the question. Is God working? God has written in a book what You will do. God has written in a book the complete story of Your life. To us, we are surprised. To us, we come across new situations every day. In my family right now, my niece is dying of cancer. She's 12 years old. She's the most precious little girl you could ever imagine. She just yesterday had her final, after 2 years of stem cell and all of the brain surgeries, the physical surgeries, plus the endless chemos of every kind of chemo. She had gamma knife radiation yesterday, which is a pinpoint radiation. It's the last straw. She got done. The doctor says, we still see stuff. Prepare for her death. bring in the bed into the house, call the hospice care, family, prepare to lose your 12-year-old. God knows. No matter if it's the highest peak of success or those times of utter despair before they were even, we were aware of them, God wrote them in His book. Every day, and notice this, fashioned for me. Fashioned for me by who? By the loving Creator. The all-knowing, all-powerful, all-able Creator has fashioned these days for me. When I lose sight of this, I cannot walk with God. When I begin to understand this, everything becomes possible. Now, for God, the whole life is written down. But what does He tell us in Matthew chapter 6? Live one day at a time. You guys all know when Jesus says, sufficient for today are its own troubles. Live one day at a time. As a family, with my niece, we're saying, even at the dinner table last night, my wife and I and the grandparents, we're saying, well, what are we going to do this? When are we going to, what happens if this takes place? And then what about a week from now? And what if she gets pneumonia? And we said, wait. Let's stop. Today she doesn't have that. And today she's not going through that. Sufficient for today are its own troubles. We are not going to live in tomorrow. That is God's job. Because God has lived all those days out. They're already done for Him. But for me, what do I know? That today is sufficient and that today has been fashioned for me. This isn't random. This isn't chaotic. Some wicked person isn't controlling my life. Cancer hasn't taken over my knees outside of God's power. This has been fashioned for a purpose, for a reason, by an all-knowing, all-present, all-powerful there. He is the Creator and He knows and He is God. It is already done for Him. These days were formed for me, verse 17, and this is to me the pinnacle of the psalm. How precious to me are your thoughts. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. What does this tell me? This isn't just God thought of me once, or God did this when I was created, or God is just around and He's thinking about this and He's thinking about that, and then He might forget about me for a week or two and I might feel like I'm in that forgotten state. How precious are your thoughts and how vast are they? You see, David doesn't even have a word to use. He doesn't say, you think about me 1,000 times or 100 times. He says, it's so vast, I can't even consider them, but they're not evil thoughts. They're not, you know, destructive thoughts. They're precious thoughts. The Almighty is not just there when you're created. He is totally, completely aware of you right now, and His thoughts are for you. I can't even begin to explain it. Verse 18, let's move on. If I were to count these precious thoughts, they would be more in number than the sand. If I were to count these precious thoughts, they would be more in number than the sand. Where did David live? Where did he live physically? Jerusalem. Israel. Is it sandy? Have you ever been there? We're talking about sand as far as you can see in every direction. We're not talking about a guy that just goes down to the beach and sees 10 or 20 feet of sand and looks down the beach and says, that's a lot of sand. This is a man standing in a country of sand. And he said, if I were to count them, they would be more in number than the sand. This verse changed my life. In Bible college, I was going through one of those really legalistic moments where before Bible college, it was just getting born again and loving God and being part of Jesus and everything was perfect. Then I got to Bible college and all this legalism started coming on me and condemnation. And I looked around and thought, I'm not perfect and that person's better. And you know, you guys ever gone through that stage in your Christianity? I don't know if you've gone through it, but I was so legalistic. I thought, I'm not even saved. I broke up with my fiance. I mean, I was just a depressed mess. For what reason? For no reason. I was just a weak human. So my wife now, at that time my fiance that I'd just broken up with, could see that I was just in distraught through my own legalism. And she said, this verse, if you understand it, it'll pull you out of all this. So she took a little plastic bag and put a handful of sand in it. And it literally ended up being a little thimble full of sand. And she tied that bag together with a little thing of raffia. And she put this verse on a little, you know, paper bag ripped up, and it said, how wonderful are your thoughts towards me? If I were to count them, they'd be more in number than the sand. And I was sitting there in my room, totally depressed, and I looked next to my bed, and there that little bag of sand was, and that little verse, and I just thought, that can't be real. I'm such a sinner. That can't be real. But if it is, I want to know how many thoughts there are. So I opened up that little bag, right? And I stuck my finger in. And just the sand that was stuck to the tip of my finger, I was so legalistic, I counted them. I counted like 87 granules of sand that was just stuck to my finger. But you couldn't even tell that I had taken anything out of that little corner of a baggie, let alone the whole world. And I just thought, Lord, at that moment, I can still remember it, sitting in my room, depressed in Bible college, everything changed. How precious are your thoughts towards me, and how great is the sum of them. And I just sat back and said, Lord, it's too much. I don't even know what to do with that. But what I do know, I'm done looking at me. I'm done looking at my own abilities, my own concepts, my own power, my own mistakes. Lord, I'm going to look at you. And are you there? Absolutely. Are you aware of everything? And what are you doing? You are working at this moment of every day of all times. And then he ends verse 18 by saying, I awake and I am still with you. This is how I interpret this Hebrew psalm. It is so great. It's like a dream. It's like a dream. All of this stuff is in my mind and I'm praying and I'm going through all this stuff. And when I awake, it's not just a dream. Lord, it's real. When I awake, I am still with you. Does God love you? Is God aware? Is God active? Is God present? Absolutely. Don't think of it as some dream that's in a book or some movie that you see or somebody else's experience with God. If your theology is real, it'll go so deep in your heart, it'll actually bring tears to your eyes and you will say, God, no matter what, I will follow you, trust you. I will love you with every part of me. So if legalism is overshadowing you, throw it off. It's not real. Jesus has paid for it. It's done with. Is his love there? Absolutely. When you're in the deepest part of every part of your life that you can even think of, say, Lord, you are with me. How did Jesus end Matthew, or the book of Matthew? How does Matthew end it? Go into all the nations and make disciples, and what? I will be with you. That's all we need. That's all we need.